Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/NSS to save 20% off any order.
A security app from Edward Snowden. Steve Gibson's going to hop on and talk about Inspector and which phone unlocks the fastest. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, California, it's the new screensavers.
Who was that tall guy? I don't know. He looked a lot like me.
He looked so familiar.
I was just standing over here watching him do the intro.
Welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 140, recorded Saturday, today. January 20th, 2018. Je suis Léo Laporte.
I don't know how to say that. I'm Jason L. That's all I got.
You do great caveman, though. I like that.
Thank you.
I like that a lot.
Jason.
Jason.
All about Android Tech News Weekly and whenever we can get them on the new screensavers.
Absolutely. Love it.
We have an amazing show today. Coming up in just a bit, you probably heard about it. Edward Snowden has a new app for Android. Nathan Freitas, who's the director of the Guardian Project, will join us to talk about turning your old Android device into a portable security system.
I had it working on my Nexus 5.
It's kind of cool.
So
it's true.
Any old Android device. We're also going to talk with Steve Gibson, who's going to give us a little bit of detail about his latest freeware called Inspector.
I love Steve. He writes his stuff in assembly language. This program is 100 and
it's tiny.
I think 143 kilobytes.
Yeah.
And he says it would be a lot smaller. But about 93 kilobytes are high color icons required by Microsoft.
Yeah, because you have to have that icon in there.
Don't you hate that when that happens? Totally. We have two calls for help coming up. One on cord cutting, another on sharing photos to multiple devices.
Excellent. This person, you may remember her. Her name is Megan Maroney.
She was great.
We had a battle royale with the iPhone 10 that I am using for the Twit Switch.
I can't
and
believe
her using
you're doing
my Pixel 2 XL.
I can't believe you're doing that again. And this time for 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah, okay, that was a surprise, by the way. She threw that on me during Tech News Weekly. I don't know if she actually thought it was going to be 6 weeks ahead of time or if she just said it because she forgot how long it was going to be.
Let's
but she
do
stuck
six
to
weeks.
It. Oh, anyways, man. We have a battle royale on who can unlock their phone the fastest with either Face ID or the fingerprint sensor on the back of the Pixel.
You know, I know last year you guys decided not to switch, but I think Megan, don't tell anybody, but she's really liking that Pixel 2 XL.
She is. And she's the one that picked the 6 weeks. I think she did it because she wants more time with the Pixel 2 XL.
She wanted to keep it. Yeah. We also have questions from the mailbag. We got a lot to talk about, but let's first take a look at the week's tech news. Apple, yet another, another crash security flaw. This one's actually fairly minor.
Explain this one a little bit because I'm pretty unfamiliar
with it. It's got a funny name. Kios or Chios?
I was thinking Chios. Chai sounds about right.
But it's also Chaos is in there.
Yeah.
We actually have seen these before, and it's happened. And don't get too cocky because it's also happened in the Android side.
Completely.
Has to do with the rendering engine on the operating system itself that renders graphics or text or whatever. And you remember there was a Stage Fright exploit.
Yep.
Remember Stage Fright on
Absolutely.
Android? Same thing. Apple's had this before. Some clever fella found a way to send a text message to Apple's messages program that would crash the system.
Right. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did it again. Somebody did it again. So that's the bug. Apple says they're going to fix it next week. There'll be an iOS update. It's not a big deal yet, but as Steve Gibson would rush to tell you, The first step in any exploit is crashing the system. If you can get the system to crash, that means you found something that could later be weaponized, and so it is a good thing to patch it. It's not a major deal. I mean, the guy who put up the test on GitHub took it down. I don't know if, you know, you'd have to have a friend who had your, you know, messaged you, has your phone number, and is a hacker and malicious.
Right.
If you have that, you're going to want it to be patched.
And you know what? I mean, and in Apple's, you know, Apple's always really good at taking care
They'll
of stuff
They'll fix it
right
fast, away.
Right? Yeah. Like, they see these things, they recognize it, they're able to push these updates out immediately.
Easy
as an Android, as a long, you know, lifelong Android user, I'm jealous of that.
I know. So it is a good thing.
At least
see?
I get that for six weeks.
I don't think Megan's getting her iPhone 10 back. Wow. Here's something, good news. Are you a Fi user, or do you use Google Fi?
You know what? No, I do not use Google Fi, because I don't travel. I feel like I don't travel enough to put, you know, have full benefit of it.
I love Google Fi. The way that they have a new pricing structure that makes it more like other carriers. The way it worked until now, you pay $20 flat fee. That's to give you unlimited texting.
Right.
And by the way, international, unlimited texting, local and long distance within the United States. And then you pay $10 per gigabyte used for data. Mm-hmm. And the way they had it set up is you would say, well, I think, and I said, I'm going to use 5 gigabytes a month. So they said, okay, good. Your first bill will be $70, $20 plus $50 for the data, $10 a gigabyte. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't use it all, okay, we'll apply that towards your next bill and on and on and on. So you only pay for what you use, any fraction of a gigabyte.
I love that, yeah.
And that is really good. Mm-hmm. The fact that it works in something like 190 countries all over the world, I use it and I do travel enough that it really is a great thing. But even just that kind of straightforward
that
pricing.
Peace of mind, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just kind of know. Absolutely. Well, they decided to take it a step forward and say your bill will never be more than $80.
That's great.
So what they said is you'll only, two things are changed. One, you only pay not ahead of time, but as you go. So you won't get a bill until you use that data. It'll be $10. Let me get this right. I think it's $10 a gigabyte up to 6 gigabytes.
Yeah, basically, before this 80 would get you 6 gigabytes, now you get 15 gigs at 80.
Well, so what happens is after, if you use 2 gigabytes, you only pay $20.
Right.
If you use 3, $30, 4, 5, 6, 7, up to $80.
Got it. Yep.
And at that point, they don't bill you anymore until you get to 15, and they still don't bill you, but they just slow you down. So basically, it's Google's unlimited data plan.
And they slow you down. If you don't want that slowdown, if you don't want to be throttled, you pay $10 per gigabyte.
Starting at 15. Yeah. So you don't pay.
Right.
You don't
exactly.
have to pay retroactively.
Right.
So I think that, you know, what this does is...
It's a great option.
I think it lets them... Yeah, it's they call it bill protection. I think that's really what it is. It's like your bill isn't going to be over $80.
Right.
Even if you use up to 15 gigabytes a month. And if you use more, it still won't be more unless you pay for it.
Yeah, I love a lot of things about Project Fi. I love what Google has done for the wireless industry, for the industry itself with Fi. It's really hard for me to step away from my T-Mobile plan, which is one of those $30 a month unlimited data, which is air quotes unlimited, right? It's up to 5 gigs, and then it's throttled beyond that. But I am always connected to Wi-Fi.
You're such a natural for Google Fi for a couple of reasons. One, you're using a Google phone.
I know.
Fi requires some, it's a very limited subset. I think there is the LG phone, one of the phones.
There are ways to get it.
One of the phones works with Google Fi.
Yeah.
But basically you want to use a Google Pixel 2 or something like it. But you do. So that's one hurdle.
Sure.
It's not so much if you travel all the time. I mean, that's nice. You're using T-Mobile. That's what Google's using. But they use T-Mobile. And if T-Mobile's not good in that area, they use Sprint. And if T-Mobile and Sprint aren't good in that area, they use U.S. Cellular. And if none of the above apply, they'll still use Wi-Fi. And they'll switch between them for whatever's the best signal.
I feel like...
Why wouldn't you want that? You'd still be using T-Mobile.
Well, no, you're right. It ends up being a cost thing. I hardly ever go higher than maybe 3 gigs a month.
So that would be $50.
So that would be 50 compared to the 30 that I'm paying right now that I get pretty much what I need.
Oh, you have that $30 plan, but it only has, what, 200 minutes of phone?
It has 100 minutes of phone. 100
minutes.
But I use Hangouts all the time to call.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just ingrained in me at this point. But this, I actually really like this change, because prior to this, like you said, the cost could go up and up and up based on heavy data usage. Now at least they're saying there is a cap, so you're not running that risk of, man, this month's bill was $110.
You're on Fi, you will have gotten the text message, and this is my Fi interface, and it says, you're now covered under bill protection. Okay, good. Current cycle, I have less than a day left. I wonder, have I hit the no, you've used 0.14 gigabytes. So that means I'll pay $1.40 for data plus my $20. Yeah. So my bill this month will be $21.40.
Oh, my goodness. Come on.
So come on. Come on.
All right.
You stick with your $30 plan. They're all probably pretty similar when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
I did see something that's getting some people upset.
Yes.
And I got the email. Now, Twit, we have more than 4,000 hours of viewing a month YouTube.
Yeah. Right.
And we have more than 1,000 subscribers. We have more than 100,000 subscribers on our main channel. But my personal Leo Laporte YouTube does not. It has more than 1,000 subscribers for reasons I don't understand because I never put anything on there. Maybe people want to know. They want to be noticed. If Leo puts anything here, let me know.
Yeah, make sure I know.
But it does not exactly have 4,000 hours of viewing a month.
Is it a month or a year?
I think it's a month. If it's a year, who wouldn't have that?
Well,
God, anyway, you'll get an email if you're under that
slot.
You'll get an email if you're under that threshold and say, sorry, you can't monetize. You can't put ads on there. You can't be part of the partner program. Now here's the thing, and this is why people are getting upset. It isn't a disadvantage for established channels like Twit. We easily hit that threshold. Mm-hmm. I don't care to monetize my personal channel. But what about the next up-and-comer who has a great channel, a great idea, but he doesn't yet have 1,000 subscribers or he doesn't yet have 4,000 hours of viewing? What does that person do? And so the complaint about this is it's kind of cutting off the up-and-coming, the newcomers, mm-hmm. the new guys.
Right. Yeah, it's cutting them out potentially. I mean, this is kind of a reaction to what we've seen in very highly subscribed, you know, people who absolutely qualify. PewDiePie, who's the other guy recently?
Logan Paul.
Logan Paul, who have this captive audience and end up doing something, you know, that
reprehensible,
pretty bad to say the least. And so YouTube feels like it has to make these changes to further vet. I mean, I don't blame them. Obviously, they have to protect the service, but man, they've got the weight of this has to be so heavy. They feel like they need to make these changes. I'm not quite so sure that changes like this address the problem. Like someone like Logan Paul, this would have not changed that situation at all. But I think
They said this is to solve things like that.
That's my interpretation. I feel like they're making a lot of these changes because they want to further tighten the rule, you know, the incentives around people who are making content that they can monetize, and what kind of content, like the checks and balances behind what kind of content actually ends up getting sent out to all these subscribers. Maybe there's less incentive for up and comers to, you know, or a longer amount of time for them to be, you know, figured out as far as what kind of content they're putting out there and corrected.
Maybe that's their intent. I think it's good for one reason that maybe only I care about. But I see a lot of young people, especially kids, say, I'm going to be the next PewDiePie. I'm going to be the next YouTube millionaire. I'm going to create my videos. And they go out there and they turn on monetization. They expect to get rich. And Google, in my opinion, in the past is YouTube, I should say. It's Google. But YouTube has kind of encouraged that. You know, they published a list, top 10 millionaires publishing on YouTube. They really, it's the NBA thing, right? Where you take a little kid who says, I'm going to be in the NBA someday and be a billionaire. Mm-hmm. And I think it creates false expectations because most people won't make a lot of money, won't make any money on YouTube. So in a way, I kind of like the idea of, look, if you want to do this because you love it. Same thing with podcasting. I've been told podcasters for a decade, don't do it because you want to make money. Mm-hmm. Don't go there because you want to be a YouTube star. That's the wrong reason. Go there because you have something to say, or you want to, you know, you like the engagement, you like the community, you want to build a community. If you're going to make money, that's a mistake because in all likelihood, you're not.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the reason why so many people are and expect to be able to monetize and are upset by this. I think that's actually a very, very good point.
Right.
People see their heroes opening toys, or kids rather.
Yeah, there's a 6-year-old, right, who makes money, makes his like a top 10 opening toys.
Oh, yeah, there's way more than just a 6-year-old. I mean, there's tons of people making ridiculous amounts of money.
Do you girls
opening
watch,
toys.
Watch those channels? Do you
like
know, them?
They have in the past. They don't really watch them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was so strange.
It is strange.
YouTube,
it's very strange.
YouTube is one of the first things that made me realize I'm an old man. Because I look at YouTube and I go, what are you kids thinking?
Meanwhile, you know, the highlight of my kids' week is the Saturday and Sunday when they get a couple hours of tablet
time.
To
watch YouTube.
And they can watch YouTube. Yeah. If they had it their way, that's what they would watch all the time. So obviously there is a connection happening on the YouTube platform with kids these days.
Oh,
that
I know.
The older people, like, we just don't understand
it. My 22-year-old son doesn't watch TV. He watches YouTube.
Yep.
Did they have Saturday morning cartoons when you were a kid?
They did,
They don't have them anymore.
Yeah, I had Saturday morning cartoons, and that's exactly what I compared
to. That's what we had.
That's what exactly what I compare it to. This is their Saturday morning cartoon.
And the difference is, in those cartoons, they advertise all sorts of crap. Sugary cereals, Weebles wobble and they don't fall down, all sorts of stuff that was junk. This is junk. A little higher quality.
Way less regulated, though.
You don't have Captain Kangaroo.
You know, I wonder what the long-term ramification of that is.
You know who we have? Practically as good as Captain Kangaroo. Steve Gibson. Steve Gibson's joining us right now. He did a thing that was so cool. Hi, Steve.
Hey,
you
Steve.
Remember Saturday morning cartoons?
Hey, guys. Of course, I remember Captain Kangaroo with some fondness.
I grew up on, and Bunny Rabbit would drop
and
the
Mr. Green Jeans.
Mr. Green Jeans. The Banana Man with stuff in his. Now we're making,
yeah, we are showing our age.
Now we're making people feel a little uncomfortable. Steve did something that I have to give him big props for. Really, really cool. The Spectre Meltdown flaw that we've all been talking about on all processors since 1995, AMD, Intel, even many ARM chips, is being slowly patched. But it's very difficult for Windows users to know if it's been fixed or not. You can run Windows Update till it doesn't have anything more to say and still not be fixed. And Steve did something that makes you so happy, it makes it possible for you to know. Tell us about what you, Inspector, Steve.
Well, so as you know, Leo, shortly after the Spectre and Meltdown revelations happened, a couple people came out with sort of solutions for figuring out what was going on. Microsoft, among them, had a kind of an awkward PowerShell script, which
the name tells you everything you need to know. The Speculation Execution Validation PowerShell script.
Right.
I ran it.
Right.
With some effort.
Exactly. And the other thing that annoyed me was that it became clear that unless you were using the fall creators update version of Windows 10, that is the very, very latest one, which many people have deliberately said they wanted to wait like a while before doing, you still weren't fixed, even though Microsoft's own PowerShell script didn't tell you that. And then there was the other question of how much performance hit people would be taking, because in some cases, systems were being reported as being substantially impacted. So after a couple of days of like seeing nobody else really do what I thought I was hoping somebody else would do, I just thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to do this myself.
There was a silly one from a company called A Shampoo. They're a malware antivirus company, I think. A Shampoo's, first of all, it would take a while. Scanning, which as you've explained to me, Steve,
there's nothing
silly
to scan.
It's instant.
Yes.
So they just wanted you to know they were working. And then the other thing, they required an internet connection. Again, completely unnecessary.
Right.
So I tried that one. I think the Microsoft PowerShell got the job done, but it was definitely not for normal people.
Well, and like, for example, the A Shampoo thing only said green checkbox or red X. It didn't give you any information about what was going on. So what I wanted to do was to really solve this problem for regular users. So what Inspector does is it gives you a quick summary of whether or not you're vulnerable and what your system's performance relative to what it used to be would likely be.
Before we do that, I just want so everybody can do this, follow along. Alex, show my screen because it's very simple. You Google INSPECTRE, and because Steve is a god, it will be the very first search result, no matter whether you're, you know, where you are or whatever. That's the page we were showing. And then because Steve is also awesome and old school, see that nice 3D this download? Nice job, Steve. Watch how fast. That's it. It's done. You couldn't see it because it was under the bug. But it's, what is it, 140? What is it?
124K. It's gotten a little bit bigger because I've added some additional features.
Like high-color icons. So there it is. It's running. And that's how fast it is.
Yep.
So literally in 15 seconds, you can go to find and install and run it. Now, tell us what we're seeing here, Steve.
So it provides you right off the bat, as you can see, the green and good. It gives you an immediate summary of your system status. But what I did for like everybody else and for those who don't get all green is it then interprets what it finds in English so that with a series of red and green paragraphs, it explains why you don't have what you probably want, which would be green across the board. And in some cases, for example, why your system will be slower. It explains whether your motherboard has been patched with the firmware, which is required for one of the two problems, the Spectre problem, and whether your version of Windows is aware of the problem and how far it has gone to help you solving the problem. So essentially, it sort of dissects the whole situation and just lays it out in English so that anybody can understand what's going on. And because it appears that Microsoft may be dragging their heels on getting this really fixed, it also kind of holds their feet to the fire a little bit and comments that, well, you know, you're running Windows 7, and although it's being patched with security updates, Microsoft hasn't bothered to give you a high-performance fix. Instead, you're getting the low-performance fix, which they're just doing because they don't care, apparently. So, anyway.
They're doing because you ought to have a new version of Windows. This seems to be a trend in Silicon Valley and elsewhere.
That's right.
One of the things I do like that no one else does is you show the performance hit. We mentioned that. And then nobody does this. If you take a performance hit or you're doing the kind of work that the fixes are really slowing down your machine, you interleave a lot of user and kernel operations together. You put buttons on here, I can't believe it, to disable protection.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, the vulnerability is theoretical. We don't know of a single instance where this has actually been used to get anybody, to attack anybody. So one could argue if your system really does slow down, and we've had reports from kind of regular users who've said, oh my goodness, my corporate laptop slowed way down after this was added to it. But then they were able to push this button on Inspector to administratively disable that fix, reboot their system, and it came back to its original performance.
You'd probably want to do your work that you needed to do and then re-enable it just to be secure. But the fact that you can do that is really a nice feature. I appreciate
it. Well, it's there. It's in Windows. It's supported by Microsoft. It's documented in Microsoft's pages, but it involves going in and mucking around with the registry, which, you know,
this is a lot.
It can be a little confusing.
Did you write this in assembly language?
It's in assembly language.
Yeah, of course.
And what's interesting is the first release upset all these antivirus scanners. It was going off like crazy. And it's like, well, why? Well, it turns out it's because of that registry key, which is sort of dangerous. And the antiviral system saw that and said, oh, this must be malware. And so all I did was I encrypted the key in the second release. And now it's fine. All the antivirus is happy and nobody goes off anymore.
That's why I don't recommend antiviruses, because it's that. It's just that simple.
So dumb.
44,000 downloads today, 205,000 total. I'm sure that number will be going up and up and up.
I did verify I did verify that one question you had, Leo. This will give you valid information if you run it under Wine, either on a Linux machine or on a Mac.
Oh.
About the status of your chip and your motherboard and firmware. I am going to the chip itself and extracting the information about whether the firmware has been updated.
But not the OS mitigations, or yes?
No.
Okay,
no,
so no. I ran it under Wine on my 2012 iMac, and it was not patched.
If you fire the app up again and put it on screen, under the control menu in the upper left, you're able to click an option to show you technical details, and it flips it from the English language description to an itemized point-by-point in the upper – the little control menu in the upper left, the little ghost icon.
Oh, click, right-click on him, show tech details. All right, so that would be useful on a Mac to give me a little bit more information. And perhaps the OS mitigations are not showing up if you're running in Wine on a Mac or Linux, right?
Right. Yeah. And in any event, you really could not count on them. But if for Mac users who do have Wine, this would show them what was going on with their motherboard firmware.
And that's the most important thing, yeah. And I have noticed that, by the way, the machines that come up clean with Inspector almost invariably have had a BIOS update as part of the fixes.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Very nice job, Steve. I really, again, the community thanks you because this is a huge help, and I want to get the word out to everybody. Google Inspector, INSPECTRE, or just go to Steve's site, grc.com, and you'll find it in the freeware section because he's not charging anything under security. It really is a very nice tool. Steve, thank you for the good work. I really appreciate
Thanks very much, guys. Great to talk to you.
Will, I suspect, be talking more about Spectre and Meltdown and all the security issues.
I think so.
All the things afoot.
2, 3, 4 years.
Every Tuesday. Every Tuesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Or just subscribe to Security Now, Steve's fabulous show. You can get it on his site or from our site, too. Thank you, Steve. Live long and stay secure.
Take care, Steve.
Thumb out, right? I always got to remember that. Thumb out.
That's right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Isn't he great? It's such a boon to have him as part of our community. And
It trim, right?
He pretty much ripped that out in a day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And we were going back and forth. He would say, all right, well, what do you get now? I was trying unpatched on unpatched machines and went back and forth. And he gets a lot of help, I think, from the news groups and was able to really verify that this works on any possible.
So what exactly is happening when you're using the other ones and it's sending data over the internet and it's taking 20 minutes?
No need to connect to the internet. I think that the Ace Shampoo scanning thing is just to make you, if they did it so fast as Steve's does, people would go, well, that didn't do anything.
It didn't work.
So it's just to reassure them it's actually doing something.
Right.
A lot of stuff does that. People don't realize how much software will play psychological tricks like that.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Windows has for years thrown up the desktop screen and the icons, even though it's still booting, just to make you feel like it booted faster.
It was faster. I'm there.
But anybody who has Windows knows that the first time you're booting a machine, you can't really do anything for another half a minute or minute.
Yep.
It's not really booted. It's just showing the screen. There's a lot of that in software. Hey, let me show you something I love. This is the new Tracker Pixel. We've talked about Tracker before. It's the first Bluetooth tracking device out there. It's definitely the best. They changed everything back 8 years ago, 2009, when they released their first tracking device. I guess that's 9 years ago now. And they've done it again. This is the all-new Tracker Pixel. It's the smallest, lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You put this on whatever you lose. Keys? You bet. If I don't have a tracker on my keys, I would be spending hours a day looking for them. Put them on your phone if you want. Put it on in your luggage, on your bicycle. Put it in your wallet, small enough just to put it in a pocket in your wallet. And then anytime you misplace your devices, you fire up the Tracker app on your Android or iOS device. It'll show you a map. This is where we saw it last, but this gets even... And by the way, there's a button on there. Do you see that big red button that you can press that will make the tracker scream? I've used that. I've told this story before. I had a Scotty Vest shirt. Lisa and I went to a concert. Before the concert, we went to a bar, and we went to the concert. I'm sitting there, and I'm patting my pockets. I lost my keys. I couldn't find them anywhere. So I said, Lisa, I'll be right back. I went back to the bar. I'm searching the cushions. I asked the bartender, have you seen a pair of keys? Then I realized, oh, wait, I have the tracker. Press the button on the phone. one of my hidden pockets starts to scream. I had it the whole time in a... That's the problem with the Scotty Vest stuff. You can't find anything. You need a tracker if you use Scotty Vest. But here's the best thing. The crowd locate feature is really cool. So you leave your keys at a bar, but then some good Samaritan picks them up and says, I'm going to give them to the lost and found, then forgets and goes home, maybe takes a flight to Timbuktu. Where are your keys now? Well, the crowd locate is so cool. There's 5 million trackers out there. That means there's millions of tracker owners. Whenever any one of them with the app on their phone walks by, without their doing anything, they don't even know about it, silently, the app, it's Bluetooth LE, it sees the tracker, it says, oh. It sees the serial number, and it notifies your app, no matter where you are, and says, hey, your keys were just spotted in Timbuktu.
That's really cool.
So cool! I want you to go to TheTracker, TheTracker.com/NSS. You'll save 20% off any order, so stock up. Get a bunch of them. They have a lot of other things, waterproof case. They've got lanyards, all sorts of stuff. They even have the original tracker. And then I really like the Tracker Bravo, which is an anodized aluminum that you can engrave. This is the Tracker Pixel. This has LEDs around it. I mean, they have a variety of them, but 20% off anything at thetracker.com/NSS. And don't worry, 30-day money-back guarantee. If for any reason at all you say, it's not right for me, they'll completely refund your money. There's no risk of this. TheTracker.com/NSS. And we thank Tracker so much for making the new screensavers possible and for saving me about, 20 hours a week searching for crap.
Yeah, I found my backpack because of Tracker.
Did you?
I left my backpack.
Where'd you leave
somewhere.
It?
Well, I left it at the gym, but I didn't realize that I had left it at the
That's
gym
the
until
problem.
A couple of days later, and then I was like, wait, what's going
when
on?
When you can't find something, what does that mean? Well, it's still there, you don't know where it is. Yeah. All right, did you know that you could take your old phone? Remember in the spy movies where, you want to know if somebody's entered your hotel room, right? So you put pull out a hair and look at and you put it on the door, right? And then you
how
see
many
this,
times have I done this?
How
Leo?
Many
countless
so that you
times.
Come back and if the hair is falling off the door, somebody entered your room, or you do the same thing on a drawer or whatever. Wouldn't it be cool if you could take some old Android device just lying around, just put it on your desk like that, and have it notify you? Even better than a hair, it could message you on your current phone and say, somebody's here, and even better than that, show you a picture of it. That's Haven on the line right now with us, Nathan Freitas. He's director of the Guardian Project and helped create... Hey, Nathan!
Hey, Leo. Great to see you.
Good to see you. Jason. I like your tour shirt. I'm assuming that's why you have an onion on your T-shirt.
It is. It's delicious produce as well.
Actually, we've talked about tour before, but this is kind of something a little bit different. First of all, how did this project come about?
Well, I've been working for a while on, through Guardian Project with my team on tools for activists, journalists, human rights defenders, sort of satisfying these really more extreme use cases through mobile apps. And I've also been working with sensor technology, using smartphone sensors to capture evidence that can be used in court cases, human rights courts, international courts, to verify media. And some of my friends at Freedom of the Press Foundation knew this, and people that used to work with Guardian Project. And it all came together one day when Edward Snowden and Michael Lee, who were there, were brainstorming about how can we protect journalists really from physical intrusions. And as much as you think we talk about encryption, that's great for the network. But often in the world, there's so many people who are affected by theft, by physical assault, by having people come into their spaces without them knowing it. And so they really wanted to find a way to satisfy that, and they came to us to do it.
So did Snowden have some ideas, or who came up with this, I think, very clever idea?
It was, I got a call from Harlow Holmes at Freedom of the Press Foundation. She said, can you jump on a Jitsi Meet call? And I jumped on, and there was Ed Snowden.
Wow.
And,
wow. Oh,
was,
hi, Ed.
I know. Like, hey, cool. Let's talk.
If you saw the documentary, Citizen 4, about Ed Snowden, when he was doing this, he would put a pillowcase over his head and the computer so that if there was a camera in the room, they wouldn't see him type his password. I mean, and you know what? He knew because he was a contractor for the NSA, he knew what the risks were. So he's very well aware of the lengths that spy agencies will go, bad guys will go, to snoop on you.
And I think he really wants to stop just scaring the bejesus out of us and actually build police. So, right. You might have last summer he collaborated with Bunny Huang, who's a famous hardware hacker.
Love Bunny. I know Bunny from years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, they built the introspection engine, which is a dock you put on your iPhone to tell if you're being monitored and backdoored.
Right.
So
that
was a creative collaboration, and he published a paper. And now he came to us, and he's incubating ideas. He's super creative. He's super enthusiastic. Really, like, one of the best collaborators we've had, and the whole team at Freedom of the Press Foundation. So it's been great. And, you know, he's just a really great person and came up with so many ideas. And it wasn't, you know, the idea of the lone genius inventor is mostly a myth, except for maybe Steve Gibson.
He is definitely lone. I don't. No, even so Steve has a lot of collaborators.
So we've been working on this for a year, and it also is open source. So we started with code by another developer named Marco Zaccardi, who we've never met, but he had this really cool motion detection, which you'll see in the app for the camera. And he had some other sensor code. We had sensor code. And we put it together. We figured out the threat model. Like, oh, should we back up everything in the cloud? No, because that's surveillance, right? If you take data and
someone's
computer, that's not going to make a journalist or an activist or anyone feel safe. And so then we said, well, how can we use Signal and Tor to interconnect devices? How do we build essentially, you know, a Nest Cam for a very paranoid user community.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody has, you know, if you're thinking, well, where could we get a motion detection device that senses light, movement, and sound, has accelerometers, has cameras, has microphones, has access to signal? Where could we, who would have, we all have one in our pockets, right?
Yeah.
Just like you, we probably have a few leftovers from years gone by. Yeah, who would have such a thing?
That's my favorite part about this project, because I'm always like, you know, we review a lot of phones here, obviously, but people, we just collect these things because what do you do with them when they're done? Put them to use. This is an awesome use for an old device.
So you put this on a, or somebody in the chat room, on a Nexus, did you? Somebody put it on
I put
Nexus.
It on a Nexus 5 in the office. I didn't bring that out here. I have it right
but
now.
But we have it on your Pixel 2. So let's show people how this works.
Oops.
So you download the free app, Haven, from the Play Store. And you turn it on. You're going to perhaps give it the phone number of another device. And if you use Signal, even better, you can give it your Signal account number, which is usually your phone number. Mm-hmm. And you've made it active. So what is it doing what's it doing right now, Nathan? It's just sitting here.
Yeah. So it's actively monitoring the camera sensor for any sort of significant change, a delta in motion.
Ooh,
it's looking
it sees
for
my head.
Yeah, a sound threshold of the microphone, so probably picked up your voice, movement.
Look, here we have secret document. Oh, yeah, let's steal secret document.
If it's a pitch black room, it's using the ambient light sensor to look for like a flashlight, for instance.
Can it only see straight up, or what is the area it can see?
I mean, whatever your camera sees. So we're really dependent. One of the most interesting things is how different each device is with their cameras. But the other exciting thing is, you know, if you add a fisheye lens, you can anything your phone can do, we can take advantage of.
Plus, you could position it somewhere. Now, you know, you could put it up on a show. You could position it so it could see the whole room. You easily figure out how to do that, right? And
I put it in.
Isn't going to attract a lot of attention.
Yeah, I mean, you leave a phone on a desk in a hotel room. That's one thing. You can, you know, we're really starting to understand the depth of and variations of people who want to use it. So when we're talking to human rights organizations and they have offices they want to protect in high risk areas, right? So that's one thing. We have people that want to, you know, I joked that it's the most secure baby monitor ever. So you could leave it next to a crib and even sense, you know, not just only the crying, but, you know, if someone falls or footsteps on the ground through the vibration. And we even had a durian fruit enthusiast group from Singapore say, could it detect durian falling from the tree in the middle of the night? So we don't have to go out there. So
probably I would guess.
If a durian and there's falls another group and no called, one's there to smell it.
Yeah. There's a group called Rainforest Connection that's using smartphones to monitor poaching and logging.
We've had him
so
on
it's
the
not
show.
Just,
yeah.
I love those guys. And it's not just us. I mean, I think the idea that not only can you take used phones – but that anywhere in the world you could buy an inexpensive Android phone. Instead of having to custom build hardware and go into that cycle, you can use what's there as a sensor platform and help people.
So the journalist that's worried about their laptop either being broken into and, you know, important information pulled from it or even stolen altogether. Obviously, this app doesn't keep people from taking the laptop or opening it. All it is it's a contact point. It's a notification point for that journalist that something actually happened.
It's that hair on the door.
It's that hair on the door.
Yeah. But you might also get pictures.
Right.
Yeah, and then the idea of evidence and gathering, I mean, what Edward Snowden said is, you know, it creates a herd immunity against these attacks. And what he means is now people have to wonder, do they have Haven running in this space, right?
Good.
Is Haven there? You know, and I think that is really the idea that someone could be doing this makes the attacker think twice.
You see, I found some strange person looking at my stuff the other day, and so this is in the log.
If you tap the photo, it'll open full screen. You'll see the whole picture.
Oh! He caught the Leo LaPorte guy. Look what he was doing.
He's dressed in his spy uniform.
Now, the good news is this is open source, so people can look at the code, make sure it's not doing anything malicious. And it uses known strong solutions for communicating, Signal or Tor. If you have Signal, that's the easiest way, right? It'll send a message via Signal.
Right. You can sync either every single photos, every single event can be synced in real time over Signal. Or you can say only really notify me once every minute or 5 minutes if you want to limit it. But it means that you don't need a SIM card. You can use a tablet to send over Signal.
Oh, because it could just be on the Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And so there's a lot. The open source side is amazing. First, we announced this really just to get the open source project going. Of course, when Edward Snowden announces something, there's a lot of response.
Yeah.
But we've had an amazing growth in our project. I just want to thank all of the contributors who've joined. But we've also gotten a lot more people thinking about threat models and attackers and spy movies. And, okay, they're going to cut off the Wi-Fi and then they'll take over the cell towers. And what do we do then? So there's a lot of exciting ideas like creating a heartbeat so that you know if they cut the Wi-Fi, for instance. So there's a lot. We have a lot more to do. It's in beta. But again, being open source means that people can audit it and trust the code and trust our process. But they can also contribute to it. And we've really had a wonderful response from the open source community.
Well, and it strikes me they not only could contribute, but they could learn from it. Because, for instance, if IoT devices were more secure, like this would they'd be less of a problem in the world out there, you know?
Exactly. And we've been really talking, you know, I think when I talked to you last, I was really pushing Tor Onion services as an interconnect for IoT. Signal can work just as well. And I think, you know, right now it reminds me of that time when people said, why do we need end-to-end encryption? Why do we need HTTPS? why not? You know, it doesn't mean you can't share data with a third party. It just means you get to choose when to share data with a third party. So if I want to Signal sync my data to an Amazon cloud, I can, but it's not the default behavior for a device.
Was the feeling that TLS, that HTTPS was just not secure enough?
I think it's fine, but that means usually you have to go first to a third party if you want to connect to yourself remotely. This means I can have my phone anywhere in the world and receive the data from this device point to point.
Yeah.
So that's all. And I think, you know, it's all part of a solution. And we do hope that because this is open source, we're showing a better way, and that the durian fruit community will have their detection device.
Finally. We've been waiting a very long time.
Is there development ongoing? Is there more to come?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's I emailed you, like, there's a new beta. Make sure you get the latest.
I got it.
That's what we're running.
Android's Play Store, so I got the update automatically, which is nice.
Yeah, so we have a very rapid development cycle going. We have the lead UI person from Salesforce has joined our project.
Wow.
And is
it's a very nice UI. I tell you, for a program like this, usually you don't expect so much polish. This has a lot of information. It's really nicely done.
I think the main idea we want to do is add video recording. That's a big one.
Okay.
Right now we don't have.
Yeah.
We want to add the ability to synchronize multiple devices together over so you can basically have if you shake it a little more, you should see this.
So you're measuring, you're testing the accelerometer in here.
Yeah. For whatever reason.
So it's an NVIDIA. Oh, we want to be able to sync multiple devices together so you could have multiple deployed. And we want to have an iPhone version. And it might be that the iPhone version is not, it doesn't necessarily make sense to run this on an expensive iPhone device. We're still figuring that out. But everyone else is the iPhone version.
And also you probably have to have a jailbroken iPhone because they just don't give you access to these sensors in the way that Android does.
Yeah, that's true. And so we're really listening to the feedback from partners. We have a human rights organization in Colombia called Movilizatario, who's been using this with people at risk there of extrajudicial killings and kidnappings. So we're really trying to figure out, is this something that could help them, you know, before they rush in and using it? We have a lot of other activist communities, people that want to use it to monitor sensitive servers in a server rack.
So this is really clever. I mean, it really, you kind of hit the nail on the head. It kind of is like a super secure Nest Cam that can do a lot more, is less expensive, that you control. You're not letting some third party store it, not paying a subscription fee either. I think they better watch out. this is a really great platform.
Thank you. We want our ideas stolen and taken and used. That's what I get grant money for. So please, Nest, Bing, whoever.
Yes, do this. This is great. The Guardian Project is online, guardianproject.info. If you want to learn more about what Nathan and his team do, it really is very important work, more important now than ever before. And you can find out more about Haven by going to their GitHub site, looking at their software. There's more than Haven there. And, of course, download it from the App Store. Put it on your old, tab. I have a bunch of old kind of Android tablets that I don't use anymore.
Yeah, Nexus 7 is a good platform for it.
Anything, if it's got Wi-Fi, it's probably going to work, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Nathan, great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for doing the work
you do.
It's
really
important.
Thank you, Nathan.
Take care.
Thanks.
Very cool.
Yeah. I love it. I love putting old devices to work on something.
It's kind of fun to play with.
New. Yeah.
Well, think about it. Next time you're in a hotel and you want to know, did somebody come in my room and what did they do? You just put it on the, put it there and just leave it there and see what happens. You get the log.
And then you end up with the log. You can share out the audio files if you want. Actually, you can share out anything that ends up in the log if there's something really important. But, it's a WAV file. So if you've got that audio trail and you need to inspect it a little bit later,
it's funny how addictive this stuff is. I never thought we needed cameras around the house. We live in a nice, safe neighborhood. There's never any problem. But there's all sorts of uses for stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like you can see, when my kids came in to borrow the Segways. You can,
which that's why the segues aren't
actually,
there.
An awful lot. But these are, it turns out it's not always just security. It's just knowing. When one of our cats was kind of missing, she went and she looked and was able to go back in time and see when the cat was. We had the lighthouse and we also had some cameras outside and she could go back. You find all these uses that you really think about. It's not just security. It's kind of nice to be able to look at stuff and see what happened.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Probably want to have it plugged in, though, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, the battery is diarrhea.
I'm sure it'll blast through that battery.
Just pretend I'm charging my old Nexus 5. What's the problem? You got a problem with that?
I'm charging it forever.
And by the way, you can hide the screen so they don't see.
Right. If I turned it off, it would still be logging. It'd
still be doing it.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be very useful. You're like, never mind.
I didn't ask Nathan this, but on the one hand, you want to publicize it, right? But on the other hand, you really don't want bad guys to know that this such a thing exists. Although he said there is a beneficial effect. They're a little more careful going into rooms because
there might
be cameras there. Right?
Caution.
Caution. Hey, let's do a call for help.
Let's do it.
Let's go down to Disneyland, Buena Park, California. Eric is on the line.
Hi, me and my family are trying to cut the cable. We're wondering what was the most cheap and effective way with fast Wi-Fi, like with Wi-Fi routers and amplifiers, and if you recommend them. Thank you very much.
Oh, Eric was recorded, and he wasn't in Disneyland. But,
hey, you don't know that. That fan looked really festive, that ceiling fan.
He could have been in, the cast members' break room in Buena Park. So are you a cord cutter, or do you have a cable subscription?
We do not have a cable subscription, actually. We just weren't watching enough TV, and then, services came along that made it so that we could drop in on a monthly basis when we need it. And so
the first thing, you are going to need internet, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And high-speed internet, unfortunately, in this country, other countries maybe maybe have a little bit better, but in this country is a duopoly in most cases. You probably have two choices, the phone company or the cable company.
Yeah, yeah.
And generally, cable is faster than phone. Now, if you're lucky and you can get fiber, for instance, from like our sponsor Sonic or Verizon, that would be a great choice. Often, though, they try to, and this is true of the cable companies too, upsell you. I felt so bad. My mom got upsold to the triple play package. She pays almost $200 a month. All she needed was internet. She's not even getting very good internet.
Oh, and I just, that's unfortunate.
They take advantage of you.
Yep.
So be a smart consumer.
They make it super confusing. And sometimes they make it so that the thing that you actually don't want, let's say, be it a landline or even cable for that matter, is, you know, what you do want
right.
is roped in together so it's cheaper if you actually get those things than it is without.
Most cable companies charge you more for just the internet than for the internet and TV.
Yeah.
It's just, they're terrible, awful human beings. So start by going, I'm not kidding, awful human beings. Start by going to dslreports.com. This is a great site for reviews. See the left happy customers? You want to try to find happy customers for the stuff that's available. So you can enter your zip code, find out what's available. You can read reviews of those internet service providers. That's a great start. All things being equal, the cable company is probably going to offer faster internet. And here's one of the things you need to do to figure out what kind of internet. You've got to figure out how many people are going to be watching at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
If you've only got one TV and everybody sits around like The Simpsons and watches one channel, then you probably don't need more than 25 to 50 megabits. But if you've got two Netflixes going at once and somebody's surfing the internet and somebody's doing crossword puzzles online, you're going to multiply that out to figure out how much bandwidth you'll need. It's all added together, right?
Yeah, and I would also add to that from my own personal experience that you may be fixated on the download speed, but you really want to pay attention to the upload speed as well, because if that's too low, you might have a great download speed, but say somebody's in the other room uploading some photos, and that ends up swallowing up this bandwidth in a strange way where suddenly what you're watching on the TV in the other room gets down-resed or, even worse, kind of pauses off and you have to restart it. We have that with our internet where our upload is not as fast as it used to be previously. And
it's
so as a result, if my wife plugs in her Pixel and it starts automatically uploading photos, it will totally start pixelating the content on the TV in her front room, which is kind of a bummer.
That's a super important point.
Yeah.
Then the next thing, of course, is you've got the internet coming in, you found a good provider, you found a good price. I have to point out that cutting the cord generally isn't a money saver.
No. I think we all thought that it was going to be, didn't we?
By the time you add the stuff you want on top of the expensive internet, it ends up being pretty...
It's about the same.
By the way, that is not a coincidence. That's exactly what the cable company wants. You're doing this more because you want freedom, you want to stick it to the man, you just don't want to deal with the cable company for whatever.
Right.
So get the fastest internet you can for the best price you can. Then you're going to get probably Wi-Fi, right?
Mm-hmm.
In general, I'm a big fan of, they're not cheap, the mesh Wi-Fi solutions.
Yeah, and they've never been as easy as they are right now.
So easy to set up, and they are smart. So whether it's our sponsor Eero, or Plume, or Orbi, or Develop from Linksys, these things usually have two or three units that you'll spread out throughout the house.
Yeah.
They'll help you position them, and they do a few things that I think are really important. For one thing, many routers don't update automatically. And nowadays, because of all these security issues, automatic updates is really important. You want to go with a company that is committed to keeping their router up to date for at least a few years and will push those updates automatically. All the mesh routers do that. Mm-hmm. So getting a mesh router for security is a good idea. They also are smart. They learn. So you're taking advantage of what the other people who are using this router are teaching the software, and they also monitor your system so they know, Kathy's watching Netflix in there, and Fred's watching Netflix in there, but Joey's doing email. We'll send more bandwidth to the Netflix users and a little less to the email users. And that's the kind of thing a mesh router's smart about. Most routers aren't that smart. That's called quality of service, and they do that automatically. So there's a lot of good reasons. It is admittedly more expensive, but I think for security and performance, you're just going to get a better system if you get a mesh router. So Wi-Fi, mesh router, For pure speed, the Orbeez are the fastest. For power and use and configurability, I'm very happy with the Eero's. What do you use?
I am too. I'm using Eero right now as well.
And of course, they are a sponsor, yep, so you judge our, consider our recommendation. But honestly, I think that's for many people the best.
For, I mean, personally, for me, it was a very close toss up between the Eero and the Google Wi-Fi. I was perfectly happy with the Google Wi-Fi.
Cool,
and I've been using Eero for a while now too.
Apple sells the new Linksys VelOp. It's the only one they sell, and that to me is a seal of approval from a company that really pays attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
Don't buy an Apple AirPort. Those are old, and they're not really updating those much anymore. Just software patches. Get the Mesh Router. All right, so we've got a high-speed internet at, let's hope, a good price. We've got a mesh system that's giving us good Wi-Fi. Now what does he need?
Well, I think at that point, you know, where are you getting this content, right?
Right.
There are some really great services. I've spent a good amount of time with PlayStation View, which, you know, contrary to what you might believe about the name, does not require a PlayStation in order to do it.
There are a number of these. There's Sling TV, PlayStation View.
YouTube TV.
YouTube. These are over-the-top services. You pay a monthly subscription fee, and they give you a number of channels. Many of they're very like cable over the internet, right?
It really kind of is, and I think the important part there, you know, they're probably going to run you somewhere around $35-$40 starting with, so there again, check the cost of these things.
But
you're not going to save money, but you can drop in. My favorite part about this is that, like, we don't watch TV on a regular basis, but something like the Olympics happens, and we want to be able to watch TV.
Yes.
If I was on cable or satellite, I'd have to buy a yearly subscription, if not longer, and be locked into it and pay it no matter what. Here with YouTube TV or PlayStation View, I just pay $35 for this month.
Right.
I've got it for the month. I drop in. It's got cloud DVR. It has all the bells and whistles that, you know, make it convenient to have. When I'm done, I can be done. And I just
pay
$35. In some markets,
it has live locals, which is nice. You want channel 2, 3, 4, 5, those basic stations, PBS, that kind of stuff. It also has some premium stations, right? You can get Showtime on
it. You can pay extra for, I'm not quite sure which premium station.
The package is very.
So that's an important part, right? Like, what are the channels that are most important to you? Drop into these services onto their About page and check it out, because you'll probably find most of them. I'm guessing you won't find every single channel.
No.
On every single one. You're going to have to play a little sacrifice.
Slightly different, but they almost all, I think to my knowledge, they all have 30-day free trials.
Yeah.
So you have an opportunity. In fact, you can get 6 months without paying a penny because you can try them all.
Yeah, that's true.
Sling, all of them. I don't even need this because I do pay for cable, but I love YouTube TV for a couple of reasons. And again, you have to check your market, but it has the live locals. I like the interface. I think they've really done a nice job. $35 a month. It has DVRs for up to 6 people in your family. Each of you can have your own DVR. Which is really handy.
It's unlimited, right? I mean, you just basically mark your show and you say record everything from this show going forward.
It's a cloud DVR, which is kind of, as you can see, I really only watch 2 shows, Fargo and Portlandia. They also have, you get YouTube Red with it. So if you're one of those families that has young people that only watch YouTube, it is just as easy. It kind of integrates YouTube into your regular television viewing, as well as Google Play Movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, YouTube Red doesn't have any ads.
Right.
So you can rent movies or buy movies. So all of that, and I think Google has the best bundle in that regard.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. PlayStation View seems to have the best price package with
and they
lot
have a few
features.
Different packages that you can buy into.
YouTube only has the one.
Right.
PlayStation, you should also check before you buy to make sure it has your locals if that's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like I asked my mom, she said, well, I have to have PBS, and that is generally going to be a local television station that you're going to want to have. So you got to see what is it. Maybe do a poll among your family and say, what do we have to have?
Right.
Do we have to have the Cartoon Network? Do we have to have CNN? What do we have to have? And then find the ones that have the closest to what you need.
Yeah.
What else? You may be buying extra stuff. There's lots of kind of unusual over-the-top cable networks that offer, like Filmstruck, which offers older movies in the Criterion Collection. We were talking about this the other day. I subscribed to this because, you know, while Netflix is great, it doesn't have the best movie selection, and it may not have the old classics that you want. If you're a big fan of Turner Classic Movies, you may not be able to get that, for instance, on your package. But Filmstruck is the only way you can stream Criterion movies. I'm a big fan of this. They have a lot of interesting stuff. This is an additional fee, though, and this is why I say in the long run, you're not going to save money, because once you figure out Before you even look at those, what I would suggest is making a list of what you have to have.
They're your priorities list. Yeah. That's going to inform exactly what you need to
And once you figure that out and you price it, you may say, well, golly, this is as much as a cable bill.
Why am I doing this? Yeah.
I like it because you're sticking it to the man.
Yeah.
Those guys, those cable companies, they don't deserve any of our money.
Get off our lawn.
Get off of my lawn. Is there anything else we need to tell him? I think that's pretty good.
I mean, you know, the only other thing I might add to that is if you're cutting the cord, it's very easy to forget that there's free television floating out in the sky.
Oh, yeah, he's in Buena Park. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Go to TVFool. I think it's .net. Go to TVFool. Put in your zip code. It'll tell you what over-the-air stations you can get. .com. TVFool.com. Yep. What over-the-air stations you can get and what kind of antenna you need. You may have to put it up on the roof. Yep. That's actually the best deal of all. Yeah. You can get the locals. There it is. A great site. Every time I mention it on the air, it goes down, though. It doesn't have a...
Not very robust.
So don't go right now. But it's a really useful way to figure out what free over-the-air TV is available where you live. Buena Park, you should be able to get every LA station.
Everything, yeah.
And then what antenna you might want to get and where to aim it and everything. It's really useful for that. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah.
That's the best deal of all.
Right. It's easy to forget because we live in this digital age where we forget that was the solution for...
You know what channel we get?
TV existed.
Channel 50.
We get nothing up here.
There's nothing on Channel 50. If you want a DVR and you're using an over-the-air antenna, there are a couple of good choices. Channel Master is one, and HD Home Run from Silicon Dust. Those are the two they do over-the-air. TiVo does as well, but you have to pay a monthly fee or a lifetime fee for the channel guide. I don't like that idea. So Channel Master or Silicon Dust, and you can put a DVR on that too. Pretty cool.
Nice.
Thank you, Eric. I feel like we did such a good job with that. We probably should do another one.
Yeah.
Let's try it again.
Let's do it. Let's get limber.
I feel good. That was kind of the ultimate cable cord cutters guide.
I know.
We just put that together.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. On the line right now. Is he on the line? Dave. Dave, are you alive from Fort Collins, Colorado? Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, good to see you guys. I am looking for a update on advice for what to use for a photo sharing site, photo storage and photo sharing. I used to use PhotoBucket, and now when I send share invites to friends and family, they complain that PhotoBucket has stuffed, you know, basic
terrible. I hate PhotoBucket
access.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they were good at one time, and I did use paid when I was back when I was paid.
Sure.
Anyhow, looking for things that I can, you know, upload in original format. Although I'm not a photographer, these are just cell phone pictures. Hopefully free. Hopefully that would be stored in the original format. But primarily easy to share, where the share recipients are not forced into joining something.
That's an important piece of that.
Or something.
That eliminates Google Photos.
Well, no, it actually doesn't.
It doesn't?
It doesn't eliminate Google Photos, and that was going to be my top recommendation.
I love Google Photos.
Yeah, and you mentioned, from what I understand, it's kind of mixed devices, right? Android 7 phone, a GS7 Edge for you, there's Windows, there's iOS.
Apple, right.
Personally, my recommendation for this would be Google Photos. It's less of like a network, but if you have a Google Photos account and you've got a bunch of photos in your photo reel, you can select one or multiples of them and hit the share button, and it will allow you to create a new shared album. And what that does, it gives you a link, it puts it in there, you can name it, whatever, make sure your photos are in there the way you want it to be. And then when you share, you get that link and you copy that. You can give that to anyone, or you can share it out to Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And anyone, whether they have the app installed or not, can click that link. It'll take them to a web page that looks really nice, has it all nice and formatted. All your images are there. It's kind of a controlled way to do this.
So you don't have to have a Google account to see that.
No, you do not.
You would if you wanted to put more photos into it.
If you wanted to add into it, sure. You would.
That's one of the nice things about the shared, though. If there's an event, a wedding. You can, everybody has a Google account. They can all put stuff into it, and everybody can see it. But you don't have to if you just want to view.
No. If I have an album and I want to share it with 100 people, I mean, I haven't done that before, but if I really wanted to do that, that link makes it so, and I've tested it, it a million times, and it works really well.
You have a lot of control over privacy. Yep. There are commercial services like Shutterfly, which I really like. Shutterfly, a lot of pros, believe it or not, use Shutterfly because it's really a photo printing site, right?
Yeah.
You can get mugs and mouse pads. No, don't show that. That's something else. That's my secret surprise at the end.
Don't spoil the ending.
Not so secret anymore. Shutterfly.com, and that's free. They presume that they'll make money off of you because you'll make prints. And the way I like that, because somebody can go there, you know, Aunt Maud is always saying, I just want... So just send me some photos. Just give me some prints.
Coffee mug with your
you
face
can say,
on
Maud,
it.
Just go to Shutterfly, print whatever you want, and she pays for it.
Yeah,
not you. So, so
that
that's
is so true.
Yeah, that's nice, but it is a commercial service. They would have to create a Shutterfly account. I don't know if they'd have to view it, but certainly if they wanted to make prints.
Yeah,
I am going to show you one that we found out about. It was announced at CES. It's not out yet, but this is something I'm kind of interested in. One of the reasons I like Google Photos, and some of the other, OneDrive has a similar service. Mm-hmm. Yahoo has a similar service with Flickr. But one of the things that they do that's really cool is they categorize stuff. You can type dogs, and it'll show all the pictures you've ever taken.
Love that.
I have 60 or 70,000 photos on Google Photos. Mm-hmm. And you can search for stuff. It does face recognition, so you say, I want to see all the pictures of Aunt Maud. Or Aunt Maud can say, I want to see all the pictures of Jimmy and Sally. And that's really handy. That's one of the things Google Photos does. So look, those are all the dogs. Is that your account, Alex?
Jerry.
That's Jerry's. There's my dog. How'd you get my dog in your account? That's Ozzy. Oh, because he was at work wearing his Santa's outfit. It was a very festive Christmas.
This is messing with me, this picture right there.
So I do like that, but some people don't want to put their photos on Google. I understand.
Yeah.
You know, it's free, but they don't like the privacy concerns.
Yeah.
They want to store it locally. So there's a company, and we've recommended them before, and I use them, called Synology. They make network-attached storage. Now, this is for somebody who wants complete security, complete privacy, complete control. No third party involved, no commercial service involved. They have announced that in the new version of the Synology Disk Manager, which isn't out yet, they're going to have a new app called Moments. So what you will do, and others could do this too, is you'll automatically have it copy your photos. That's what most people use and ask for anyway, is backup, right? So you automatically copy your photos. It's a redundant disk array. You can have multiple Synologies. You could have one here and one at home, and they keep in sync. So you have lots of backup, lots of security, very huge storage. I think I have 9 terabytes, 10 terabytes, something like that. But they just announced this Moments, and I think this is going to be very interesting. It is essentially a private Google Photos. Now, I haven't tried it yet. They did some demos, but we don't really know how good this is going to be. But they say it's going to do face recognition. It's going to do image recognition. It's going to know, you know, what's going on. You'll be able to group photos via location, subjects, topics, and share them as well. And so this is going to be, I think, a very interesting long-term play. And they have already Android and iOS apps that work with it. So in other words, you could do exactly the same thing you do right now, where you take a picture and it's uploading to Google Photos. Instead, it'll upload to your local NAS in your closet and be stored there securely. And so you don't have it on any third-party server. You have absolute control. There's no additional cost once you pay the admittedly high cost for the NAS. These can be hundreds of even thousands of dollars, depending on how much storage you want. I like this. I use the NAS for everything. I replaced Evernote with my Note on Synology. They even have Google Docs-style documents. You know, they do everything you need to do. Backup, sharing. And I'm really interested in what they're doing. They're very good software. So this will be... Moments is going to be something to look for. But it's not out yet. Did any of those fit the bill, Dave?
Yeah, I'm primarily want cloud-based, not necessarily Synology closet-based and the associated costs.
Yeah.
But mainly convenience to the people with whom I share. And I don't mind if I have to have a paid account on my end to do that.
Well, I use SmugMug as well. SmugMug has been around forever.
You still use that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you do pay for a SmugMug account. It's not free, but in a way, I like that. That means they're going to be around, right? That their business model is not selling your data to advertisers. Right. It's to provide a great service. They also allow you to sell photos, sell prints, sell mugs, sell T-shirts, sell all sorts of stuff. It's very high-quality storage. You can do photo raw up there as well as JPEGs. Yes. You can organize it. You can share it. You can have it password-protected or not. If you go to leolaporte.smugmug.com, you'll see many of my photos are public there, but many of my photos, you'll see albums that you can't get to. Those are shared with family members. I think SmugMug is another one. If you want to pay for it, that's a very, very good service. And I think, yeah, these are pictures I shared of our trip to South America in the spring. But there's, you know, there's Josh with his bird. Lots of who knows what that means? I don't know. There's Anna, the little kitty cat. So I put pictures there because I like it's a great way to share with people and family and friends. So that's another one
that's
to look
a good
at.
Tip, yeah.
And they don't have to sign up or sign in
You can send them a link. They click. They could still be password protected. They don't have to have an account or anything. They can browse it and then they can click it and buy if they want as well. So that's another good one for Aunt Maud. It's kind of like Shutterfly without the commercial back end.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's what I was looking for.
Good. Absolutely. Yeah, lots of solutions out there. Yeah. I actually use Adobe's Creative Cloud now because they really want you to put this stuff in the Creative Cloud. I'm not sure I'm crazy about that, but that's another. You know,
yeah, you're more of a professional than I am. I'm a point and click and share.
Gosh, nobody ever called me a professional before.
Well, I've been listening many years, and you know what you're doing with that.
It's my hobby. I am far from a professional. Thank you, Dave. Great to talk
to
you.
Thank you, Dave.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you all. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Best I think a lot of pros use SmugMug. That's
okay.
Very popular with pros, and it's I've used it forever. Yeah, I love it. Hey, you know who's going to be on the show next week? Nothing wrong with this guy here. I love having Jason Hell on the show. But
who? Wow me, Leo.
I've known a guy named Patrick Norton for a year or two, and he's going to come back on the Screensavers. If you've got a question for Patrick, I know you do. Here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new Screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
All right, now why don't you introduce this next segment?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right, well, I said it a little bit earlier. Megan Maroney and I, we are currently intertwined. I'm using her iPhone 10 for the next 6 weeks. Five at this point. No one's counting, by the way. Megan is using my Pixel 2 XL, and we thought, you know, they both use different ways of getting into the device. The iPhone 10 has the Face ID.
And no Touch ID.
And no fingerprint, no Touch ID. And the Pixel 2 XL has the fingerprint sensor on the back. And we thought, there's got to be a bunch of scenarios that we can run through to see which one of us gets into our phone faster based on the technology that is there. And that's what this is all about.
Watch.
It's the Great American Twit Switch again.
Part two. Okay.
We're spending 6 weeks. We upped it up a little bit.
Megan upped it up, actually. I just went along for the ride. It was a little bit of a surprise, but I'm okay with it.
How are you enjoying my iPhone 10?
So far, so good. One of the things that I've been really impressed with is the Face ID. The fact that there is no fingerprint sensor on the back here like I'm used to with the Pixel 2. What do you think about the Pixel 2?
I am getting used to the fingerprint reader, and we thought we would take this time to do a little test to see which is actually faster.
Or maybe a bunch of little tests, different scenarios, and see which one is going to open when in a pinch. Let's jump to the first challenge right now. All right, for the first challenge, we're picking it up off the table, seeing how fast we can unlock it. You ready, Megan?
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three.
Ah!
I think you got there. You got there before
mm-hmm.
me. There was a little bit of a stutter.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we're going to reach into our pocket.
Okay.
We have different pockets, so this could get interesting. One, two, three. Yes. No, you got there before me.
Oh,
All right, next challenge. We're each wearing a glove. We have to open the phone. If there's any interaction, it has to be with our gloved hand.
Okay.
All right? It's going to be a challenge for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. One, two, three. That was easy. Yeah, you keep going. You keep seeing how you get. Good job, Megan. Yeah, I think you could probably give up. I didn't think that was going to go very well for you anyways. iPhone finally wins.
Yeah.
This is a bowl full of water. This is where we test how we do with wet hands.
Yeah.
Hands in the water.
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three. Dang it.
Can we dry off our hands?
No.
Wait, why isn't your face working?
I don't know.
You're open. Your phone is
open. I got there. That took a really long time.
Mine
is. It's a little messy.
Working at all.
You are failing, Megan.
Oh, because I could have done this, but yeah. Okay, this one's with a mask on.
It's perfectly normal. All right.
Yes.
One, two, three.
I'm.
What? You can't identify my face, Apple?
I'm over here now.
We're in the dark, and that's why we have this night vision camera, actually. Super fancy. We're going to open our phones in the dark and see who wins. One, two, three.
I won.
Didn't. Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't see.
Because you were opening
your looking at my phone. I was giving it my full attention.
I won.
Dang it. Dang it.
Our final challenge.
I'm a little scared. Hands tied behind our back. You don't want to see back there because they're totally tied together. Opening the phone without our hands. How are we going to do it? Who knows? One, two, three.
This isn't working at all. I thought this was going to be so easy for me.
Did it!
There we go.
Yes. No. All you had to do was look at it.
I did that. It didn't work. I don't know. What's wrong with your iPhone?
Good point. No. I feel like I won and lost that one.
Yeah. What was the tally? So that actually means my phone won. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
I'm very happy then, even though I kind of lost.
Mm-hmm. What we've learned here is if you find yourself with your hands tied behind your back, you should have an Android phone or a Pixel.
Apparently. But they're both great phones, you know, just a little different. Scenarios have different strengths and weaknesses, I suppose. So pick your weakness that happens to you all the time and then go with the phone that won.
So cool. Oh, that was the best thing ever. Nice. I can't believe that she unlocked the Pixel with her nose. She entered the code?
Yes, that's exactly what she did. She Woody Woodpeckered the password.
You could have done that.
But it wasn't like responding, and then finally I was hovering because it was trying to identify my face, so that's why I was standing still, but it just wasn't doing it.
It's actually, it mirrors my life experience exactly. I often find myself with my hands tied behind my back.
Totally.
And, there's no. But I do admit that at night I pick up the Pixel 2 instead of the iPhone, because it's just not going to see me when I'm lying like this out of bed.
In that case, probably so. Yeah. I'm just, you know, picking up the Pixel, it's second nature for me that when I pick it up, my finger's
right there.
Yeah.
So you get used to, with the iPhone 10, you get used to the idea that it's not going to recognize you for whatever reason. You've got you grew a beard overnight, or you've got a balaclava
happens
on.
To me all the time.
You just tap it and then enter the code, and it's a 6-digit code. It's not too hard. It's not the end of the world.
Totally.
Either way, I think you can get in.
Yeah.
But Yeah, it's a good, excellent points. Thank you for doing that. So this is going to go on, right? You're going to have 6 weeks. You're going to try different things.
Oh, that's a good idea. We can probably come up with some more challenges.
Yeah. I mean, the apps are pretty much the same. I don't think you're going to miss any apps that you've been using on Android.
No, and that's actually been, that was a comment that Megan made to me, is that at least last time compared to this time she doesn't really run into that. She's not running into the thing where, I need this thing, but it doesn't exist on Android.
It's actually more likely to happen to you because Apple is so restrictive. For instance, Wi-Fi signal measurement stuff, you can't really get on the iPhone because they don't let you, a third party, have access to that.
Yeah.
Whereas on Android, there's a plenty of those.
Yeah, the multitasking aspect of the iPhone X where you have to, you swipe up and then
don't
you
ever
hold.
Do that.
I hate it.
Page, swipe at the bottom. And in fact, I very rarely now do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I'll show you.
I'll look at it.
Yeah,
I did not know that one.
I'll give you an in-service, kid. All right.
Yeah, I think every phone should have. You can, and it maybe came from WebOS, I don't know. But while you're in any app, you can swipe at the bottom and go to other apps.
Oh, and then swipe back.
And swipe back.
I want to swipe between two different apps.
I don't think you can swipe the other direction. I think you can only swipe one way.
Okay.
But it's still very, very handy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you're used to the recent button in Android.
Double tap. Skip right over. Yep.
See, I'm confused all the time because I use both.
Yes, I can understand.
I don't know what to do.
It's time for the mailbag.
Bring it in.
I know that much. Aptly named, isn't it? Oh, this is a memory. Is this from your Jerry Wagley collection? This is from the Jerry Wagley connection. Here we are as we get closer to May, the 20th anniversary of Tech TV. Jerry worked there. And this was Liam Maitland's show, Audiophile. Right?
Nice.
Liam is still around. He works at the local Channel 4 here. Yeah. Or is it 4
CBS.
He works? CBS. He's a great guy. Love Liam. His dad was in the Irish Rovers, of all things. He's a singer. And Liam was the host of our music show, Audiophile.
Nice.
Wow. That is, and look at that. Jerry, you never worn this. In fact, I think you probably took it out of a plastic bag for the very first time for today. Very nice.
I'm going to go to that URL and just see what happens.
Yeah. Audio
if anything, I'll go there in the Wayback Machine.
You get anything? TechTV.com/audiophile. Do you get anything?
I'm sure the Wayback Machine we can
they,
get there.
Make an offer. Would you like to buy it?
It's free.
They remember this, Jerry? You probably do. They took the server when Comcast bought Tech TV. I don't know what they did with it, but they took the web server down to L.A. with them, and then they disconnected it. But somewhere, there's a machine with all of the website on it.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't know where. All right. Let's see what we got here.
What
it's time for
we
the
got.
Mailbag questions. This is question one. Jason. Huh? Jason.
Oh, yeah. That's me.
Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Last week on All About Android, you briefly mentioned doing a factory reset on cell phones. Can you explain why you would want to do this from time to time? I only do it when I'm in an emergency. Is it true that every time you uninstall an app, it never totally uninstalls? Thank you, Romy.
I wouldn't say that it's true that any time you uninstall an app, it leaves back residual files. But there are times where you will uninstall an app and it will leave little pieces here and there in the storage of your phone. And if you ever
so over time, your phone's going to get less and less storage.
Less and less storage and
unrecoverable.
I'm not entirely sure how that plays with the performance of a system, but we all know that like if you have an Android device for a year or 2 years, over time things slow down, and you know it's hard to peg exactly why that is. That's one theory.
Reset it. Which wipes everything. You'll have to reinstall from scratch, right?
Yeah, you know, and I remember, I can't remember the topic exactly, but I remember making the comment, which is that every once in a while, if I'm using a phone for a long period of time, I do, because I'm very comfortable with resetting, with setting up a phone from scratch.
You do it all the time.
I like to reset a phone from time to time. Factory reset it, start fresh. If I'm going to remove a bunch of apps that I never use anyways, instead of just uninstall them and risk the fact that they're leaving little files here and there that I never think about and then I'm running out of storage or whatever the case may be, I just factory reset it. Then reinstall the things that are actually important to me at this point in time and go forward. And I just find it to perform better that way.
That's a good idea. I'll have to try that.
It works for me. Doesn't have to work for everyone.
One of the things I always thought that one of the things that might slow down all phones after a while is that solid state storage is funny. It doesn't, when you erase a file, it doesn't erase it.
Right.
There's a thing called trim that the operating system will go through the solid state storage and refresh it. In fact, if your operating system doesn't have trim, and most modern operating systems do, Alan Malventano says just do a disk defrag, and that will have the same effect. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if Android. Would you find out for me? Ask the next time you talk to, because you talk to these Android guys all the time.
Next time I talk to Hiroshi Lockheimer.
Yeah, Hiroshi.
Hiroshi.
Is there trim in Oreo? I'm curious.
Yeah,
because that would explain just kind of a slowness over a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, it's totally there. I'm sure you would agree.
All Android phones slow down over time.
Yeah, man, yeah. They're the best phones in the world when you first get them, and then a year later.
I think Pixels aren't as bad as Samsung. Samsungs really seem to suffer from
that. Yeah, yeah. We also got an email from Carl, who says, I'm looking for a simple voice recorder that is continuous, using up whatever storage is available, round robin style. Then when you want to freeze, you can hit the stop button and have the last X amount of hours of recording available. Perfect
like
for
a ring
an old
buffer.
Phone, okay. Perhaps. Okay. He says, I've hunted high and low, can't find an app like this. Any advice? I did a lot of searching on this, and it's one of those apps, and I know you've probably seen this before. There are categories of apps in the Play Store that existed. There are apps that exist in that category from years ago, but there's no current, modern, updated version of those apps. Blackbox CVR is one app that falls into this category. I think it was last updated in 2014. But it records on round robin style, and then at any point allows you to save up to the last 60 minutes worth of audio.
See, that's awesome.
So you could do
so
that.
So it doesn't use up all your space. It just kind of keeps an hour at all times.
Exactly. And so for like an extra phone that you had hanging out, if you were doing a meeting or you wanted to capture audio throughout the day and something important happens, you just shut it down and you'd have the last hour's worth of audio.
Well, and this is kind of like Nathan's program
it
as
is,
well.
Because actually.
It would record all the activity for an hour. And if you said it's like a black box recorder, and I guess that's why they call it black box on your car,
yep.
The dash cam.
Yeah, but instead of video, it's audio. There's another app that I found called Echo, which is also, I think the last update was 2015, maybe 2016. It has a little bit better of a user interface, and actually here you can configure it a little bit more. So you can tell it how much system memory is allocated to this and at what sound quality.
Oh,
if you go
perfect.
Down as far as 8
perfect.
Kilohertz sound quality, which is perfectly fine for voice recording, I could get it up as far as 420 of the previous minutes.
Wow.
And then you can just export that out, and you'd have an audio file.
You know why these aren't updated? No need.
Yeah.
Just done.
People
just works.
Because they work.
They work.
Because they work fine.
No need.
Yeah, but, you know, I always want to see those recently updated. But you're right. You're right. If it does the thing that it needs, maybe that's it. I asked this question on Twitter, actually, and I had a few people reply back with an app called Smart Recorder by Smart Mob. Its last update was October 2016. It has automatic recording with skip silence mode.
Yeah.
The idea being that
you hit
recording and it's always listening. And this is actually even closer to what we were talking about earlier with the Haven app.
Yeah, I use this.
It will just only record when it hears noises.
Right.
And so you end up getting this condensed recording that's nothing but all of the noise signals that have happened in your room.
Voice activated recording.
Yeah.
And somebody in the chat room is so smart, said CVR. Dave said CVR is cockpit voice recorder.
Oh, okay.
That's what it is. And that's how a cockpit voice recorder
I thought
that
was an app. I was like, well, there's one on it. But yes, that's exactly what it is.
It's a cockpit voice recorder.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. See, you can ask this guy any question. He's going to know it all. He figures it out. Thank you so much for being here. You'll find Jason on All About Android every Tuesday about 5 or 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 or 9 Eastern time.
Yep.
1 in the morning, UTC. You'll also, let's see, what else? Catch him on Thursdays on Tech News Weekly with Megan.
Tech News Weekly, yeah.
What time? 2 o'clock?
2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, interviewing the tech makers, the tech breakers. Interesting stories, also top news items of the week. We always really try and find people who are either integral to the story breaking, or find the people that are behind the product or behind the service or the target of the story.
Yeah,
that's what
it's
we're
always
searching
interesting.
For.
Yeah, really great show. Tech News Weekly, search for it in your podcast program. And, of course, he's in the rotation for triangulation about every once a month. We get Jason or Megan or Father Robert or I will do an interview on triangulation and whenever we can get him on the new Screensavers. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. It's hard because Saturday is your day off. You take time away from your family.
It's all good. This is fun.
I'm very grateful for you doing that. I'm grateful that you're here as well. If you want to watch the show live, we do it 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC every Saturday afternoon. You can go to twit.tv/live and watch it. If you do, join Dave and the rest of the gang in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Actually, I shouldn't just say Dave. There's also Loquacious and Scooter X and Twisted Mister and Dr. Mom and Osnet and Sean and on and on and on. Bunch of great people in there. If you can't watch live, on demand, always available. All of our shows are, both audio and video. Start at our website, twit.tv/NSS for new screensavers. But you can also fire up your podcast application, Overcast or Pocket Cast or Apple or Android's podcasts, and search for the new screensavers, and you'll find it, and you subscribe. And that way you always have a fresh copy on your phone to listen to at your leisure. Don't forget, we're doing our survey. It's back. We do it every year. It's a way for us to get to understand a little more about our audience. We don't like to pester you. We don't like to spy on you. So it's very helpful for us if once in a while, you know, once a year or so, you go and you go to twit.tv/survey, answer whatever questions you can. Don't sweat it if you can't. Somebody's mad because I think we ask occupation, but we don't ask if you're retired. You know, I understand. Just answer whatever ones you feel like answering, but it's very helpful for us. It also helps us tell advertisers because we don't do the things that most outlets do, which is try to figure out who you are and spy and snoop on you. We don't do any of those tags on our website or anything like that. So this way we can at least get some information so when advertisers say, well, who listens to that silly show? We could say, well, some very nice people. It helps us monetize, in other words. twit.tv/survey, and I do appreciate your taking that. Wait, how long? How many questions? 20?
It's like 4 minutes.
4 minutes. We used to have a really long one, and we said, no, let's make it simple. Just the basics. Just the facts. Just the facts.
Just the facts, man.
Thanks to Jerry Wagley and Anthony Nielsen, our producers. Today, Anthony is in the Philippines. He wasn't doing the board. You did a great job, though. Alex Gumpel, the Flowmaster, running the TriCaster for the show today. Thank you, Alex. Thank you to our studio manager, John Slanina, our supervising producer, Colleen Goldstein, and, of course, our executive producer, and my lovely wife, Lisa Laporte. I thank you for being here most of all. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.